Chapter 58. Darrow. Zevro's Palace. Glirastes, the master maker, stands before his crudest creation. The starboard hangar of the Morning Star no longer exists. Harnassus's engineering corps have carved through the midsection of the ship to create enough room to house the Spirit of Faran, our fastest and youngest torch ship. The insides of the Faran have been almost entirely gutted to make room for the most powerful electromagnetic pulse weapon assembled in all the campaigns of the war. It is not a new device on the surface, but it is the nature of war to inspire evolution. In his purple robes, Glirastes resembles an evil necromancer from one of Pax's storybooks. His hands labor with some Byzantine contraption designed for his 14 fingers. It measures arcane readouts, the meaning of which only my wife and Harnassus's astrophysicists could ever hope to understand. Old researchers with large, roomy eyes check their own notations and murmur to one another, while the younger breed crouch in isolation, their cranial implants flickering as they attempt to keep pace with the orange idol. As the EMP finishes its 18th preliminary test, I survey the length of the device, its nest of wave-shaped coils, each three times as thick around as a man, its blue lights and vacuum tubes. A steady whoomph, whoomph comes from the oversized helium reactor at the aft of the ship. The lights dim. Glirastes clicks his tongue at his servant, who bends to scratch his inner calf. Mid-scratch, he screams at a welder for silence. The thick-set red spits tobacco juice into the can tied to his neck by a string, turns off his torch, and hangs from the ceiling on his line. The engineers and construction teams hold their collective breath, not so much in anticipation of the result, but for fear of the maker's monstrous temper. Green integers dance across his face, as his eyes dart through the report, punctuating it with murmurs of, "Interesting, perfidious instantaneous amplitude, shit shit indecorous shit," and more esoteric Mercurian profanities. "Do we have a problem, Glirastes?" I ask. Glirastes sighs as if in prayer to give himself patience.
"Problem? You ask if we have a problem?"
The folds of his neck twist red as he cranes his head to glare at me like a frazzled yet contemptuous owl.
"Young man, you bamboozled me into helping you activate the storm guards under the pretense that you would use them only in a limited capacity and instead turned a city I love into a coral reef. Any compassion I had for your cause has been drowned by the encroaching sea. Yet if I do not help you again, as you so eloquently and brutally elucidated, when you browbeat me into helping you on this fool's errand to rid you from my planet, the city of my birth will resemble little else in the known universe except the center of a G-type main-sequence star. The fact that I find catharsis in profanity while endeavoring to fit 3 years' worth of research into 3 weeks of practical application does not reflect upon the enthusiasm for the work, which is little, nor the necessity, which is great. So, yes, we have a problem. But the particular nature of my frustration is isolated to a conundrum which you have neither the patience, nor the temperament, nor the cognitive ability to understand."
He turns the data on its side, scrolls through it again.
"Ah," he says. "Never mind. I solved it."
He twirls his fingers.
"You, why did you stop welding? Get back to our work. Must I do everything?"
Glirastes stalks out of the spirit and heads for his makeshift office on the floor of the hangar.
"You're all bloody saints," I say to the welders. "Ah, sir," one croons. "Can I have a kiss?" asks another. "Back to work," Harnassus shouts. "We're not paying by the hour."
We find Glirastes sighing as he slumps into his thinking chair, a queer perch made from a single flowing branch of a sun blossom tree.
"I know it is beneath you," Harnassus says,
as Glerastes' servant pours his master a glass of port.
But would you mind explaining the device to the infantry, Master Maker? It would do them some comfort to know they're not trusting their lives to magic.
Glerastes surveys the commanders I brought with me.
Now, that sounds tiresome.
He puts his feet on a silk stool and sighs as his servant removes his purple slippers and massages his heels with rose oil.
Arnassus looks 6 seconds away from clouting Glerastes on the ears.
He has little patience for snobs. I've more experience with the breed.
It's just an EMP. What's so complicated about scaling it up? I say,
and wait for the explosion.
Just an EMP?
Glerastes repeats, as if reading his own obituary aloud.
Am I just an ambulating mammal?
His eyes scour me.
Did you not retain anything of your curriculum from the academy, aside from astral belligerency?
I retained enough, apparently.
The infantry commanders chuckle. Glerastes sighs in annoyance, and regards Thraxa and my infantry commanders with distaste, offended by the sunburned visages and thick chests of hardier mammals than he, and retreats to intellectual bullying. I track what he says, because I'm married to a woman who'd be insulted if I couldn't.
Weaponized transient electromagnetic disturbances have tenaciously sharp leading wave edges, escalating precipitously to their maximum level before decaying slowly. Imagine a double exponential curve. Problematically, the shielding made by the Venusian dockyards is designed to recognize this sort of blunt belligerency.
He fixes me with a glare.
And provide countermeasures for Atalantis' fleet. Consequently, I have decided to use a benign, damped sine wave to create a coupling between the source and the victim equipment. Usually, this is a byproduct of a weaponized EMP, but the genius here is that instead of diminishing within the double exponential envelope, the sine wave wavelengths will increase. However, considering the distance required, the energy demand will be staggering. Creating a more efficient and staggered energy ignition is profoundly difficult absent a nuclear explosion, and if I do not perfect it, you will all die in the sky.
He eyes me again.
Now that I have satisfied the curiosity of your apes, the zoo is closed.
He closes his eyes.
Begone, lest you have an advanced degree or care to replace Exeter in massaging my feet.
I'll take his spot if you like, Master Maker, Thraxa says with a smile. She holds up her hands. I know they look like elephant feet, but they're tender to the right sort. Glerastes makes a face of distaste.
Such a bloodline, squandered on martial absurdity. You've genius in your line, woman. Your brother was the mind of a generation, and your father...
He sighs.
You waste your time playing soldier.
So that's a pass.
Pah!
He shoots Harnassus a look.
Don't forget my breakfast tomorrow. I can't work without sardines. Tomorrow is a Tuesday, after all.
As my infantry commanders file out muttering their concerns to one another, Harnassus follows me and Thraxa out of the star's hangar. What do you think? I ask him.
He's pig-headed, cruel, eccentric, fickle, and 10 times as demanding as my first wife. But he's a genius.
Was, Thraxa says. Riches made him slow. She glares back at the man. Little more than a lapdog to whoever holds Mercury.
You thinking he'll betray us? I ask.
I'm thinking we should endeavor to remind him Atalantia is scared of us.
What do you have against him?
I ask. First off, his designs are rubbish, robbing the Egyptians blind. And the bastard cozied up to the slavers, then to us. He's a bloodfly, invertebrate. Permission to pop him when we evac.
Denied, psycho, Harnassus says.
Wasn't asking you.
He's my second in command, Thraxa. When I don't speak, he speaks for me, I remind her.
Uh-huh. But you're speaking.
You're not killing the Master Maker.
She shrugs. Sure.
Where were we? I ask Harnassus. Can we even tell if he's full of shit? If he leaves us hanging up there, we're all dead.
He's spineless, Thraxa moans. He wouldn't dare cross us.
Probably right, Harnassus grimaces.
See, I'm not the sharpest on magnetism or waveform theory. My focus was practical mechanics. But I've got 200 brains with 1,000 degrees between them going step for step with him. He's smarter than each one of them in theory, but not all of them together. If he's playing games, they'll red flag it. Long as we keep him happy, seems he'll do what we need him to do.
That's the trick, isn't it? I say.
You want the genius happy? We need sardines, Harnassus says.
Sardines?
He says he gets headaches without sardines for breakfast on Tuesdays. Tomorrow is Tuesday, and he's fresh out.
You have to be joking, I say, for Thraxa.
I don't damn well know. This man's been pissing into crystal decanters since he was a teenager. So far, no luck. If the Heliopolitan Silvers here have sardines, they're denying it. We could raid their kitchens, but we're on unsteady footing as it is.
Where's Severo when you need him? I mutter.
Harnassus raises an eyebrow in query.
What? You think he just always smells like fish? Thraxa asks.
I think he smells like wet dog, personally, I reply.
Well, it depends if it's raining or not.
Gods, the jungles were rough. You remember that trench foot he had?
Thought we'd have to amputate, Thraxa says.
Yeah, you tried.
Then he woke up. That was funny.
Harnassus shakes his head.
This is not the conversation I thought I would have when the Reaper of Mars came to North Africa to make me a praetor. I thought it'd be all fire and guts and devilish mayhem, not prepubescent humour.
You should check Severo's pantry.
All sorts of illicit goods there, so I hear.
Why don't you check it? I ask. I won't send any of my men in there.
I sigh and motion Rona over from my bodyguards. Go see if there's any sardines in Imperator Barker's stateroom.
She goes white as a corpse.
Isn't that a task for support?
Not you, too.
It's just... Well, there's booby traps, ain't there? Alexander once tried to steal whiskey, came back shaking like a softfoot on their first aerial drop.
Fine.
My bodyguards all find something very interesting in the contours of the deck.
Superstitious idiots. I'll get their bloody damn sardines.
10 minutes later, I'm shrieking like a goat on the floor just inside Severo's room as a medicus pulls needles from my face, chest, and ass. Incredible pain races through my body as my hands and feet turn purple and start to swell uncontrollably. A flat voice drawls from a hologram of Severo's face.
Don't touch my shit. Don't touch my shit. Don't touch my shit.
It's prime, sir, the yellow says to me as she injects me with anti-venom. It's prime. The pain will subside in a minute. Swelling should start to go down now. Sadly, the colour will remain.
She looks up at Severo's hologram.
I'll wait outside. In case you need me.
Told you,
Rona says from the door.
Slag off.
When my hands have almost returned to their normal size, and feeling has returned to my feet, I stagger up and turn off the hologram. A hidden needle pricks my finger.
Shit!
Badass class DNA detected,
a sexy voice says. Nothing leaps at me from the darkness.
Profile match for Darrow of Lycos, best friend, also known as Reaper, Boss, Howler 1, Apex asshole. Brother, Mustang's bitch. Second class clearance granted. Welcome. I apologize for warning shots. Master has been notified of your skulking. Sticky finger traps deactivated. Help yourself to a glass of scotch, best friend. Take in some music, Reaper. Admire the trophies from the decimated enemies of the noble howlers, boss. Enjoy the extensive pornography library, Howler One. Relax in the sauna, Apex asshole. It has no traps. But above all else, steal nothing and enjoy your stay in
Severo's palace.
Severo's voice adds very seriously.
Second class, I ask.
Yes, Master says you know why.
I look back to Rona at the door.
Nope,
Rona says, and bugs out. Screwface makes a motion of standing guard and ducks into the hall.
Pixie, I mutter, and shut the door.
The suite is large, comprised of half a dozen rooms filled with his prizes. I've avoided this place since arriving on Mercury. To be here is to be reminded of how we parted. The place is too much like my friend. Mugs of evaporated whiskey sit in ranks atop banners of fallen warlords he's trampled. Candy wrappers fill the eye holes of solid gold skulls taken from Magnus's floating palace in Africa. The scepter I gave Adrius in Attica sits on the couch for Severo to use as a back scratcher. Only one place is spared the chaos strewn throughout the suite. My wife once told me a man's soul can be seen in the rooms he keeps the cleanest. I asked her what room is my soul. She tapped my razor. Severo's soul is his armory, but for a different reason. One wall is for use. Three suits of Severo's wolf armor hang central on the longest wall, surrounded by a shrine of knives. Tickler, his favorite, is missing. Replacement razors gleam with oil. Several from the gens Falth are there, as is the Minotaur's with its horned pommel. I gave it to Severo as a gift when his youngest was born. He always coveted it, especially after Sephi won Azure's off him in a game of who gets the most kills. Pulse fists and more esoteric weapons fill the rest of the shelves. One wall is for memories. One of Ragnar's razors. Weed's old pipe. Quinn's howler cloak. The bloody cape Octavia Auloon wore the day I killed her. Highest on the wall, in a place of honor, is the sling blade I used at the Institute. I look at it for a long time before I take it down. It is far heavier than my razor, and falls smaller than I remember. I swing it till it makes a swish, swish. I laughed at him when I saw it there the first time. Laughed even harder when I found out how much trouble he went through to track it down. But I think I skipped past the part that mattered. How much the blade meant to him. With his father always away, always secretive and frightened to show his love, that blade gave Severo something to follow, something to dedicate his life to, until he found something else. The last wall is for his family. Hollows of his girls float above coin-sized projectors so that it seems like 100 reveries fill the shelves. They've danced here in the darkness without anyone to see them for months. There are little bracelets and tokens, ink footprints and palm paintings, an emerald cape Victor gave to him when we sailed for Earth, a golden unicorn figurine. And in the center of it all, his father's blood-red Ares armor with its spiked crescent helmet. The bench where he would dress for battle faces this wall. The armor looks so odd, surrounded by the domesticity. But it is easy for me to forget that Severo's life was always war, because his father waged it instead of raising him.
After I saw how Lauren's sons were consumed by his vocation, and theirs continue to be consumed, I tried to separate war and family, like Fichtner. I thought they were two worlds that should never meet. Sevra knew what I did not. What it is like to be raised by a warlord, by a distracted man. And he knew that our world is one where everything collides. He didn't close his mind to his family before battle because he knew they did not make him weaker. They made him stronger than he was by himself. I feel the key underneath my jacket. Even though I will never be able to agree with his decision to return to Luna instead of Mercury, I understand it. He even said it to me, though I did not want to hear it at the time. He would not make the same mistakes as his father. If I ever see him again, I will ask that he forgive me asking him to make that impossible choice. And if I see my boy again, if I see my wife, I will not close myself off to them. I will be the father and husband they deserve.